Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Good evening, everyone. This is Mama Cooks, and I want to welcome you to Walls in Our Minds. We are having a little bit of blog talk fun, technologically speaking. My Firefox crashed, and I'm waiting for everything to get up and running. And as soon as that happens, I will make Terry Dodd's live mic, and I'm just waiting for the little spinning dots right now. You are listening to Walls in Our Minds. We happen here every Tuesday evening, and Terry Dodd and Red Beckman are our hosts, and we are on Dr. Kate's Revolution Radio. Our special guest tonight will be Mona Doctor, and I'm sure that, Thursday evening, I'm sorry. My is on Tuesday evening. That's the firm foundation. Don't miss it either. But Walls in Our Minds are on Thursday evening, which is what today is. And obviously, I don't even know what today is. But I am still waiting for the switchboard to come live on my computer screen, and it should in a minute. But it's still spinning. So we've got Terry waiting for his mic to be logged, and I'm sure Red is on the switchboard also. So I'm sorry for this strange beginning of the show. I hope that you all have had a good evening, a good day. Why don't we just start with a prayer and just wait for this little spinning ball to go. Father, I just thank you for this opportunity for patriots to join together and to talk about the things that are dear to our heart, our country, and our dedication to the country that you have provided for us. We thank you for the freedom of religion and the freedom of speech that you have provided in our country. And Father, we just pray that you will maintain that for us, that you will help us to be wise in our battles to retain what you've given us and to restore the Constitution and the government that was established by our founders. We just thank you for your word that gives us guidance and teaches us the precepts that we would follow. And we just praise you and thank you for all that you've given us. And Father, we just ask that this technology will just be fixed and that we can get on with our show. Well, it seems to me that my computer is just plain frozen, which it's been doing. What else can I tell you about? Terry Dodd said he was just going to suggest. Be open in just a few minutes. I can hear a funny little noise, but this is just not working. Hold on 1 minute. My Twitter opened up. I can tweet you. I'm breaking up. Okay, that's probably because my computer's working and I'm on Skype. All right, let me see if I can. It's coming up slowly, folks. sing us a song. Great is thy faithfulness, O God my Father. There is no shadow of turning with thee. Thou changest not, thy compassions, they fail not. Great is thy faithfulness, Lord, unto thee. Me, great is thy faithfulness, Lord, unto me. And I've got everything's up except the switchboard, which is what I need. Thanks, Terry. I'm glad you think I'm a good singer. I appreciate that. Yeah, you would sing harmony with me if you had a microphone. This is really funny. Ah. Okay, I am going to just open up all the microphones, and you are all live, and I am silent. Good evening, Terry.
Good evening. You caught me with a bite in my mouth, if you can believe that. Can you hear me now, Janet?
I can hear you.
Welcome to Walls in Our Minds and technical difficulties out the kazoo. Hello, Red.
Yeah, I'm here. I've been listening
in. The question is Mona on with us?
I'm here.
Hello, Mona. Wasn't that a great rendition of Great is Thy Faithfulness?
That was perfect.
I'm typing in a little conference in the back, in a back chat with Mama Cooks, and I said, sing us a song. And I never expected that she would actually do it, but she did, and she was actually good. So I'm real proud of her.
She's multi-talented.
Well, that was great. That may be the classic greatest start of our show ever, right there.
That's right.
And a good prayer too. And I'm thankful that that Mama Cooks did that for us. Well, Mona,
yes.
I don't know if all of our listeners knows who Mona Doctor is. So, Red, I'm going to let you introduce Mona.
Mona is probably the strongest female motivator that we have in the state of Montana. And what she has done there in the matter of just a couple of years, her headquarters is out of Hamilton, Montana. And what those people have done in just a matter of a couple of years, I think it was December of 2009, when three people over a cup of coffee or something decided that they would organize a meeting for January it was 08 when they met, and then in 09, January of 09, they had a meeting in Hamilton, Montana with 50 odd people, and they decided that they should organize and have a meeting every month. And by May, June, July of 09, they were having several hundred people every month at their meetings. This is just unheard of almost in the Patriot movement to have something like this. And so I was privileged to go there last September and speak to about 500 people, and I was able to meet a lot of my old friends there and such. And then again, I was at the big function in Missoula, Montana in May of 2010 here, just a few months ago. And I was able to survive a trip over there. I wouldn't have missed it for anything. My wife, who watches out for me pretty close, tried to get me to stay home and behave myself, but there was no way I was going to miss that function. And from what I heard today, the tapes of that meeting are going all over the country. And I think that's just, you know, it just expands the audience. And it would not have happened. This would not have happened if it hadn't been for Mona and her organizing ability, and the commitment that she has made has been very expensive for her. And I have nothing but respect for Mona Doctor. And so I'm just real pleased to have her here with us tonight, because there's a lot going on in Montana, and we should have a very lively program.
Well, Mona, you're right in the middle of an election cycle to boot everything else that's going on. So just launch out there and tell us what's going on up in Montana. You can start anywhere you like.
Well, first of all, I hope my memory is as good as Red Beckman's when I get to be his age. You're amazing, Red, that you remember all those details.
I wish my memory was as good as his now.
I know. I know. Yeah, I just have so much respect for you, Red, and that, you know, most people your age would have quit a long time ago. And I just appreciate the fact and respect you so much for staying in the fight. It does get very tiring, you know, to try to wake people up and give them all that you've got, and try to find those people that are hungry for the truth and hungry for freedom and restoring our country back to what it was founded on. And so I just want to just tell you, Red, how much we love you here, and how much we respect you. And you need to stay healthy, and you need to stay vibrant for a very, very, very long time. Don't forget, Moses lived way past 100, so that's your challenge. But we're going to be praying for you, that's for sure.
Oh, I need it, and I sure thank you for all the nice things you're saying. And I've seen some things happen that I more or less forecast 25, 30 years ago. We would have meetings, and we might only have 10 or 15 people, and sometimes we'd have more. But, you know, people would say, well, aren't you a little discouraged? And I say, no, it's going to come to the point in this country where it gets so bad that the political situation is so corrupt and all that people are going to start to wake up. And I'm just so glad that I'm still here. I'll be 82 here shortly. And I'm so glad that I'm able to see people like Mona and Terry come up out of the woodwork almost and take the load off of my shoulders and carry the ball the way they are. And this is one of the great things about this program, is that we've been able to introduce some people that have been putting their act together over a period of time. Last week we had the guest, Marty, who had written a book, and I haven't seen it yet, but I hope I get a chance to see it, an attorney from the East Coast, New Jersey. And he had written a book, The Illusions of Freedom. He wrote the book several years ago, he told us, and he sold some books, but nothing extravagant. But the last 18 months, he said, the book has started to sell because he's got something that people want, something that they need, and we're going to hear him, I hope, back on the program again, because that was one of the greatest programs we've ever had last week. Now Terry finds out that we've got another attorney that's getting his act together, too. And you'll be hearing about this, because Terry can tell you more about that. So with that, Terry, what have you got to contribute right now?
Well, I just want to shut up and listen to listen to what Mona's got to contribute. But I will tell you that next week, I believe we're going to have Wilton Strickland on, who has written the book, The Attorney That You Talked About, who hopefully will be joining us next week. I'm inviting him to actually call in and say hi tonight. If he gets a chance, he might call in. But he was tied up tonight, and we've got him booked for next week. So, Mona, you'll have to plan on coming back next week and joining us for that conversation. I'm also going to extend the invitation to Marty Babbitts to come on and to visit with us a little bit too next week, because I think that's going to be just an awesome, awesome show. But right now I'm anxious to hear what Mona's got going on.
Well, Terry, didn't you say earlier when we spoke that this attorney, Mr. Strickland, has moved from Florida to Missoula, Montana, which Missoula, for those of you who don't know, is only about 50 miles north of us. And sounds like there's probably a lot of good reasons why he's moved from Florida to Montana. I think one of the reasons you said, Terry, was that he wanted to make sure that his children get them out of the school system there in Florida and get them into a more rural setting here in Montana, which is a great idea, first of all. I tell you what, just to kind of get everybody up to speed on what's been happening here in Ravalli County. Ravalli County seems to be quite a hotbed for activism and what's going on in the political arena, especially when it concerns zoning issues. Agenda 21 is alive and well here. That's something we've been trying to educate people and inform people on, that Agenda 21 is the United Nations-based system, a strategy to take our lands from us, so in a lot of different kinds of ways. So, and also, just so you know, the university here in Missoula is actually a hotbed for Agenda 21 at the university. They actually are very, very active there with the strategy to take our property from us. So little did we know that here in Ravalli County, which is only really about 40,000 people, that we would be such a focal point for activism, but it just happens to be that way, and God has chosen this little tiny spot on the map to create the activism and to create questions in people's minds, to break down those walls like Red talks about. So since the Liberty Convention back in May, we have actually, which was an awesome experience, and, you know, the media tried their best, and I'm telling you, Missoula is a very, very liberal town, and they tried their best to discredit us, to marginalize us, to make us look like we were just, you know, some country bumpkins that were trying to put on this huge event and didn't know what we were doing. And but you know, we had people come out from all over the country, which was very, very encouraging. Now, since the convention, I should say more recently, the summer has really gotten a little quieter, which concerns me. And you know, I asked Red, I said, what are we going to talk about, Red? You know, there's not a whole lot going on right now, and that kind of concerns me. So our meetings, our attendance was averaging anywhere from 300 to 400 people every month, and the past 2 months in summer have really been about 200, 250, which is a little disconcerting. But maybe it is summer. I don't know. I'm hoping it's because it's just summer, and people are haying and, you know, trying to grow their gardens and prepare, and that's all good. But we've got to stay united. We really must stay active and in the fight, because unfortunately, things I heard before the convention in May, when people found out who the lineup of speakers were, which were a fabulous lineup, people said, well, I've already heard Sheriff Mack. Well, I've already heard Red Beckman. Well, I've already heard Chuck Baldwin. Well, I've already heard Schaefer Cox. You know, I was just appalled. I was floored. I thought, you know, how can it be that you learned everything you needed to learn from one-hour speech from an individual who has so much more to offer? And so I just want to encourage people out there that, you know, this is not about entertaining the public. This is about digging our heels in and getting educated and informed and waking up to the fact that we are currently living in a tyrannical, with a tyrannical government. And that's just the way it is. We are living there. We're in it. And to think that this is going to get better overnight, it is not. And I don't care who you elect into office, it's going to take a long time to turn this thing around. So I just really want to encourage people to not give up. I mean, trust me, I've wanted to give up several times, like 10 times a day. But I can't do that. You know, Red and I were talking, and Terry and I were talking, you know, we know too much. There's no way that we can, in good conscience, walk away from what it is we know and not continue the fight and not continue to spread this information. And Terry, I want to thank you for just being so diligent in the fight, because without people like you, how is the word going to get out? How is it going to happen? And it's one way to do it, but it's a powerful way to do it.
Well, I can tell you one way. I can tell you one way it won't happen, and this will give you plenty to talk about. It won't happen. It won't get out there from party insiders inside the GOP.
Oh yeah, I know. I know. Well, we had that happening right here in our county just recently, about a month ago, maybe 2 months ago. The Republican Party here has formed a what they call the Ravalli County Tea Party Patriots, which is it's a way for them, I guess, to use the Tea Party name for their platform of the Republican Party, which, okay, that's fine if they want to do that. But, you know, it's creating some divisiveness, and it's really too bad. It really is. But all I can do is recognize that, and if people want to go that way, that's fine. But we have to continue the fight in exposing the lies and telling the truth about the way things really, really are. And it's really not about parties, not Republican, not Democrat, not Libertarian, not Independent, not whatever, Constitution Party, none of them. It's not about that. It's really not about that. It's about core values. And so if we don't bring God back into our way of life, I'm telling you, we're headed down a slippery slope very, very fast. So I agree with you, Terry, on that, that it is, it just amazes me that people think that we're doing this for our own egos, and it's not that at all. It really isn't. So,
Mona, have you got any candidates up there who you would say are real statesmen, whether they're career politicians or somebody new in the game? Who have you got up there that you can really say you believe is a statesman?
Well, I would say, unfortunately, the people that are statesmen have jumped over from the Republican Party over to the Libertarian Party and are running as libertarians. Now, as much as I agree with that platform, there's things I don't agree with the platform on, I believe that running as a libertarian will definitely divide, and it will lose anyone that we have that's good in that party. We do have a few people in the Libertarian Party that I consider to be statesmen, but the way they're going about it is not going to work. I just don't feel like it's going to work. So I don't know.
Are you ending up with three party races? Is that what's happening?
Yep, that's what's happening. And you know, as much as we've been trying to educate people at our meetings about voting for the person and not the party, it is still, I mean, it's like slamming our heads against a sidewalk. I mean, they're just not getting it. They're just not getting it. So
it's walls in their minds.
Yes.
You know,
yes, it is. Very frustrating.
as long as I've been in this, I still have to discipline my mind. And when I start, you know, I get fascinated by these contests between the Republicans and the Democrats and of course, Libertarian now and then. But we've got to break through this psychosis that has been so built up. It has been so hammered into the minds of the people that this is how you change our political situation in this country, is with your vote on election day. It isn't your vote on election day that changes the nature of this beast. It is your vote on grand juries and juries. And to get that across to people, it just seems like that when you tell them about it, they agree. But then they go about and want to get back playing party politics. And if they ever wake up to the fact that in the Democratic Party, you will have a small, very small clique or whatever of people, and most of them aren't even publicly recognized, they set the program, they set the agenda. And what the people vote for on election day is all a bunch of smoke and mirrors and all kinds of garbage. And the Republican Party is no different. There's a handful of people that control everything that the Republican Party stands for on the national level or even the state level. And we've got to get that across to the people that, Mona knows what it's like because she was part of the Republican machinery in Montana. And
yep.
She knows exactly how that there's a few people that set the agenda, and that they, at their level, as committee men and such, they were just there for window dressing. They were just there to voice their opinions, perhaps, but their opinions didn't usually count for much because the agenda was already set. And, Mona, you talked about Agenda 21. Agenda 21 has been around for some time, and people just absolutely will not pay attention when this subject comes up. And they're going to have to find themselves losing their land and such before they finally wake up and pay attention to what's going on. But, this corruption that we see, I get the Western Ag Reporter, which is probably the biggest circulation Western livestock and agriculture report, and they're telling about this deal with the lady that supposedly denied a white farmer and a loan. She was in the ag department. And the whole story is now out, how that this woman and her husband were able to milk the system for about $13 million. And Obama was involved in it right up to his eyeballs. This whole story is extensive, but never once have I read, and I've read the report from I don't know how many different angles, never once has anybody ever mentioned how that there needs to be a grand jury investigation of this corruption. $1.25 billion that a taxpayer's money has been used in a scam, and it's not for Congress to investigate. They have no business investigating it. It is a grand jury made up of people like you and I that need to investigate this. And, you know, how many of us have been talking about these grand juries forever and nobody wants to do anything?
Well, speaking of grand juries, your buddy Steve Pigeon is in the middle of a grand jury mess over in Monroe County, Tennessee. And that's gonna have waves that are shock waves that are gonna go right across this whole country.
I hope so.
You know,
Mona?
Something. Yes, go ahead.
No, I'll go ahead. You go ahead. I don't want to interrupt your thought.
You know what I wanted to mention as well is I don't know if this happened across the country or not, but in our primary that we just had in June. was very disconcerting because, you know, we have open primaries here in Montana, which basically means that you can vote either on the Republican ticket or the Democrat ticket, either one. You don't have to be registered as a Democrat or Republican, but you can vote on either ticket 100%. You can't vote on both, but you can only choose one. Well, what happened here is that if you study our ballots on both sides, Republican and Democrat ballots, on the Democrat ballot, there weren't any contested seats. There were just one person you could vote for on the Democrat ticket, except for the congressional position. On the Republican ballot, every single position was contested. So we had at least two people running for each position. Well, what happened here was Democrats vote on the Republican ticket for the weakest candidate or the candidates that they have in their pocket, especially the incumbents. And so a lot of people that ran for office in the primary, good people, didn't have a chance on the Republican ticket. They did not have a chance. So we just got hammered in this primary. And I heard some stories about that happening across the country, but that is one strategy that the left uses in those states that are open primary states. So, and I don't even think that having a closed primary is the way to go. So, I don't know, maybe we need to run people on the Democrat ticket, put people on the Democrat ticket, you know, to confuse them. I just know that there are a lot of things underlying, you know, it's like the book that written by Saul Alinsky, Rules for Radicals.
Mm-hmm.
That book needs to be read by all of us. We need to understand how they strategize and how they fight, you know, how they, what their art of war is. Because we certainly don't know, because we just think people are going to be honest and they're going to do the right thing. But no, that's not what happens. And so the sooner we wake up to the fact that we're fighting a spiritual battle, the better off we're all going to be. And we really have to use wisdom and ask God to give us the strategies that we need to use in order to fight in the spiritual battle.
Did we lose
Red? Yeah, well, wait till the next primary 2 years from now.
In 2012.
Well, let me tell you what's going on in Colorado, Mona.
Okay.
We've got a candidate running as the GOP. He got the nomination. He won the primary. And when we were at state assembly, and I was a delegate at the state assembly, he got the most votes, but the party insider, you know, had a scandal come over him, and because he had done some plagiarism and took like $300,000 in fees from one of the wealthiest Muslim families in Colorado, and it all came out after the state assembly. But the first thing that happened was that the major news networks in Colorado and the radio stations too started talking about this guy as though he was not capable of beating the Democratic candidate, who's actually currently now the mayor of Denver. Well, to make a long story short, the whole problem here is that the guy's not a party insider. The people, the Tea Parties, the 912ers, all of those people were the ones that were putting him in there because he's the only one in a race that's got any integrity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the party insiders have been doing everything they can to get this guy to quit. Now they've even got Tom Tancredo, who had been out there preaching like crazy about, oh, you know, the third party things are just going to cost us the election. You know, if you want to really have a conservative put in, you can't have a three-party race. Well, what does he do? He goes and joins the Constitution Party and is now running as a third-party candidate.
Oh, wow.
And it's all about ego. It's all about ego. It's all about party insiders. They don't want somebody that's got integrity appointing the judges. That's really what it boils down to.
That's
now,
right.
There's more to it. There's more to it than that, but believe me, that is a huge item. The governor appoints a lot of these judges. He's going to have be in a position to really revamp the judiciary in the state of Colorado, and those people are scared to death of that.
Yeah. It seems that what's happening in this country is those Supreme Court justices are legislating from the bench. It's just amazing to me that they can just come along and overturn what the people want or have voted on. And that's very discouraging.
Well, how do you straighten out some of these races? I mean, are you guys working to try to hone it down so that you'll at least be able to get some real statesmen and conservatives into office?
Well, our problem is those statesmen that we considered to be great candidates have now switched over and are running under the Libertarian ticket. And honestly, I just don't see it happening. There's no way they're going to get enough votes. And they're doing it because of ego. I know that that's the reason why they're doing it. It's not to win. It's because of ego. And it's a very small percentage of people that are running on that, you know, that even follow the Libertarian platform or believe in it. We had more uprising over those people who were touting the Republican Party platform, which is a good platform, and now have switched over to the Libertarian ticket because of ego and caused an uprising in the group. I mean, people just thought, there is no way we're going to vote for these people because they're, first of all, they consider libertarians to be pro-choice. And most people that are Republicans are not pro-choice. They're pro-life. I'm telling you, it's one of the hottest issues here anyway. But at the same time, I had to ask the group, I said, well, do you know Republicans that are pro-choice? Have you ever thought of that?
Well, yeah,
so we keep trying to go back to voting for those people that – voting for principles, not for the party.
Well, that's the one good thing that's happened here in Colorado is that the Tea Party people have really gotten behind some good conservative statesmen that are running as a GOP candidates. You know, one example of that is Ken Buck, who's running for U.S. Senate here. You know, look at what Jane Norton tried to do to him. Now she's just another Kay Bailey Hutchinson, if you ask me. And now they're trying to get her to be able to step in as the GOP governor candidate. They want the guy that won the state assembly and won the primary to resign so that they can put a party insider in there. And it's not going to happen. He's not going to quit. The problem is that Tom Tancredo, I can't believe this guy is being as two-faced as he is. You know, now that I look back at it, I see how one-sided he was, how one-track-minded he was, really. I mean, his big thing was immigration and me. I mean, it's basically the immigration problem, the issue, and me. It was all about himself all along, really. I think he just used that immigration situation to draw attention to himself.
Right.
And I'm starting to see now that he's flip-flop on a number of things. including the medical marijuana issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, opportunism certainly runs deep within the system. Yeah, it's just, I don't know, Terry. I honestly don't know. And I totally believe in the grand jury, and I believe in the system of jury nullification. But, you know, it's difficult. It really is. And I don't mean to be discouraging, but I don't know. The system is so corrupt. It really, really is. I don't know if this pickle can be unpickled.
Can I put in 2 cents worth again?
Sure.
I understand your frustrations. I've been through that so many times. When I ran for governor in Montana in 88, I ran as a Democrat. And people said, oh, my goodness, why are you doing that? We had a statewide debate at one point, television debate, and I was asked the question, they said, you're not a Democrat. They said, you ought to be running as an independent or libertarian or whatever. And so I replied, and I said, well, I was always of the opinion I'd always been told that the Democratic Party is a working man's party, and I'm a working man. Mm-hmm. And then I said, I have read a lot of Jefferson's work, and he was supposed to be a Democrat. They have their Jefferson-Jackson Day dinners. And those were two great presidents we had. And I said, I've read a lot of Jefferson's material, and I said, I agree with his political philosophy. And so I am a Jeffersonian Democrat. If these other candidates, if they don't agree with Thomas Jefferson and what he had to say about government, then I have to assume that they are Karl Marx Democrats. And you see, we are going to have to use this kind of satire, this kind of thinking. We've got to talk about people like Obama. He is not a Jeffersonian Democrat. He is a Karl Marx Democrat, and he's more or less fessed up to that, and his actions speak louder than his words. And so instead of just talking about Democrats or Republicans, we've got to differentiate between the real Republicans and the real Democrats. Because the parties have been stolen. Let's face it. The Republican Party has been hijacked. The Democratic Party has been hijacked, and we have to start talking about it. We've got to say, oh, so-and-so is a Karl Marx Democrat. He's not just a Democrat. He's a Karl Marx Democrat. And we're looking for Jeffersonian Democrats that we can vote for. And we have not done a good job. Let's face it. We have not done a good job of getting across to people that there's different kinds of Democrats and there's different kinds of Republicans, and they need to be identified. They need to be when we talk about them, let's say it. They're not just Democrats. They're either a Jeffersonian Democrat, or they're a Karl Marx Democrat. They want to call themselves Democrats. Okay, let's identify what kind of Democrats they are. And out here in Washington State, they've got a campaign getting in gear now after the primary here. Patty Murray is a U.S. Senator, Democrat from Washington State in the U.S. Senate, and of course she has voted for everything that Obama has come put on the table, like the health care and all the rest of it. We've got to start talking about Patty Murray the Obama rubber stamp. Obama is a Karl Marx Democrat, and Patty Murray is a rubber stamp, you know, an Obama rubber stamp. He can use her vote to put across his Karl Marx philosophy. And we've got to do a better job of using these labels. It'll fall into place for people if you use it often enough. We should be, banging away at this right off from the housetops in this country right now. With an election coming up in November, these tea parties across the country, they need to start talking about, the candidates that are going to be on their ballots. Are they Jeffersonian Democrats or are they Karl Marx Democrats? The Republicans, are they Karl Marx Republicans? We've got Karl Marx Republicans in the U.S. Senate. We've got Karl Marx, we've got Republicans in the U.S. Senate that have been Obama rubber stamps. Am I right?
Absolutely.
And so let's quit just saying, well, they're a Democrat. Well, what kind of a Democrat are they?
Right.
Let's make that a point here in the future. We want to know what kind of a Republican they are, what kind of a Democrat they are, what kind of a Libertarian. Libertarian Party has tried to get me to join the Libertarian Party for 30 years. And I refuse because they have two planks that I can't tolerate, and that is they want free trade and they want free immigration. That's been very basic in their platform forever, and they don't want to change it. Well, that's their problem. I'm not going to vote for Libertarian. And, of course, we've got a problem with the Constitution Party. The Constitution Party is basically run by the neocons in the Republican Party, and they're they support Israel and Israel's demand that our troops go fight another war for them in Iran. Well, let's get that out in the open. Let's get this out there where people can take a look at it.
Well, go ahead.
No, Mona. You
go ahead.
What I was going to say, on the brighter side, we have really affected change locally at the county level with our county commissioners. We now, on any hot issues like zoning or subdivision regulations, we have been able to use our Liberty Bell system that I think I talked about that previously in the last call a few months back.
Yes.
And we have about 300 people in our system for the Liberty Bell system, which is a community watch program. And those names are in a BlackBerry phone in a group list. And when we have an emergency that happens where people need to show up, we send a message out, a text message to that group. Well, the last three county commissioners meetings that were in the middle of the day, in the middle of the week, that when people don't normally know that they're happening or people work, can't get to them, we have had packed houses, packed meetings because of our Liberty Bell system. And people are coming, approaching the microphone. We've had 10 to 12 people at a time from our group approaching the microphone with their constitution, their citizens' rule book in hand, and setting the record straight and reminding those elected public servants that they are that. They are supposed to be public servants that took an oath to protect and defend our constitution. And so that is one thing I'm very proud of. We've been able to affect change locally. But I really feel like that's the place you have to start, is in your own backyard. Because if you don't know what's happening locally in your own backyard, how are you going to affect change at your state or federal level? And I think that's really, really critically important. People have got to understand what's happening with the county government, because if you can get the right people into office at the local level, you can make huge strides in changing what is happening locally. And then at the state level as well, we need to start thinking of our counties as being sovereign, not just our states, but our counties. And, of course, our cities. But as individuals, we need to consider ourselves and start acting as though we are sovereign. We have, for way too long, been saying yes to the government about every little thing. We have not drawn the line in the sand and said no, 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 no more. And that's where the power does come, is in numbers, is that when people understand that, as a matter of fact, I'm got to be stepping into the Constitution Studies class here. I missed the first hour, but that's okay. I'll come in with the second hour. Jim Sayer, who's been teaching the Constitution for 30 years, he's taught us that. We are sovereigns. God is, we are, and that's the only way that we're going to be able to transform our cities, counties, and then our states. And the federal government has usurped its power over us, and we didn't even know it happened. But with education and understanding who we are and who God made us to be, we can start to take hold of that authority and start exercising that power and our rights once again. So that is a good thing that's happening here, that it's taken a while, but you know what? People are writing letters to the editor. I'm telling you, more letters are being written now than a year ago. People are finding their voice in different ways. And the local conservative talk show, people are calling into that. So we're starting to hear more people, different people, call in instead of just the same people calling in all the time. So we are proud of that, and we're just going to continue to do more of that at the local level.
Well, you know that Charles Cobb in the chat just mentioned that the feds are using funds to tie down states and locals. We've got a little program right here in Denver about a bike sharing program. I think the group's everybody calls it Sickly or Ickley or whatever it is.
Ickley.
Yeah, Ickley. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it just seems like it's so innocuous. It's such a thing that is so nice, when all they're really doing is sliding the United Nations policies in on
you.
Yes. And when somebody mentions something about it, like that, the candidate that I was talking about, the gubernatorial candidate, as soon as he mentioned anything about it being associated with the UN, all of the media started immediately calling him a conspiracy crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's what they do. Until you give them the facts, though, when you tell people to go search it for them, look for it themselves, research it themselves, go online, look up Ickley. We had people, when Michael Shaw came out to speak to our group back in March, of course, he's a taught us and spoke on Agenda 21. When he mentioned Ickley and showed us that Missoula, Montana, is a member of Ickley, a paying member of Ickley, which is an arm of Agenda 21 and the United Nations. People that didn't, we said, okay, if you don't believe it, go look for it yourself, and people did. Now that they understand what ICLEI is, they're going, uh-oh, it's right in our own backyard. This is not just happening at the United Nations level. Their tentacles are everywhere. Everywhere.
Mm-hmm. So how do you stop that? I mean, you've got to have a watchdog group out there that's bringing this stuff to people's attention, because the local newspapers obviously aren't even going to do it.
Oh, no, because they're bought and paid for by the left, by the far, far left. In our community here and with the group, we have, our different committees. One of those committees is the Property Rights Committee. And we have John and Vicki Greathouse, who combined have about 80 years of experience in property rights because they've been realtors, but they've also been very passionate about getting the information out about Agenda 21 and preserving our property rights. They have been very active. They've taken it upon themselves to create their own PowerPoint presentations. They've traveled our county, given the presentations to whoever would hear it, and, of course, at our big meetings as well. And I'm telling you, they know, they personally know the people here in our county that are affiliated with or connected to Agenda or United Nations in the form of all those different organizations like the Human Rights Network, which is everywhere. But you know, it's a very small group. It's a very, very small. It's the same people that are part of all of these organizations that are active in trying to take away our rights. Or take away, you know, to take away our rights. That's basically what they're trying to do. So we are very active here in getting the information out, but it's still, we're doing our best. That's all we can do. That's really all we can do. And getting those citizens' rule books out is critical, really critical.
You're not alone, Mona, because I think up in the Eureka area and up in there, I forget the name of that county. What county is Eureka?
Oh, it's Lincoln.
That's what I thought, but I was afraid to say it. But
yeah.
Anyway, I think they just had a meeting last night of their planning commission up there.
Uh-huh.
And they had a big turnout and just really blew them away. And apparently the county commissioners and such decided that they better just trash their county plan for growth and such because
awesome.
There was too much opposition.
Awesome. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have several counties in Montana that have taken up the banner and are really creating a stir. They're speaking up and speaking out.
How are the numbers in your meetings going?
Well, like I said earlier, summer we've seen a decline in numbers. I mean, we're at about 200, 250 people, which is not bad. But I'm praying that that is the remnant. You know, and when we get back into fall, into full swing again, that we grow the numbers again. Because we were averaging 350 to 400 people on a monthly basis. But I'm going to say it's summer, I hope. I hope people aren't getting comfortable again.
You know, Mona, one of the things that you want to keep in mind is Gideon. And you've watched this a number of times in different organizations. You've actually been a party to a house cleaning.
Yes.
And if this is truly a spiritual battle, as I deeply believe that it is, it's not really always about the numbers. Sometimes it's about getting rid of the reactives and getting rid of the infiltrators and getting rid of the weekend warrior, so to speak, and ending up with the people who are sincere, and then you've really got a foundation to work from.
Well, I think that is so true. I really, and that's what, you know what, God's been telling me that. He goes, he's been calling the herd. He's calling the herd, and every time we bring up something controversial, he calls it again because, you know, we tend to hold back a lot of information that we don't want people to get blown out of the water. But you know what? I think it's time. But
so how's the open season on the wolves?
Well, they just put them back on the endangered species list. Judge Malloy did. And there is no – well – they had 75 permits last year. They increased it to 186 this year. Big deal. That's not even a tenth of what we need as far as permits. And I'm telling you what, people, with this last decision by this Judge Malloy to put them back on the endangered species list, it's only created more anger and more frustration. And people are just going to take things into matters into their own hands. They're just sick of it. They're just sick and tired of it. So, you know, it's another way for them to create a reaction, you know, from the people. And
Mona, we're up against a break. So if you want to go grab a drink of water or something, you're welcome to do so. We will be back in just about 2.5 minutes with Walls in Our Minds.
I was there in the winter of 64 when we camped in the ice at Nashville's door. 300 miles our trail had led. We barely had time to bury our dead. When the Yankees charged and the colors fell, Overton Hill was a living hell. When we called retreat, it was almost dark. I died with a grape shot in my heart. Say a prayer for peace for every fallen son. Set my spirit free. Let me can taste the mud as I lay there dying from a loss of blood. Say a prayer for peace for every fallen son. Set my spirit free. Let me come home till the last shot.
Well, I love that song. Welcome back to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd, and I'm here with my co-host, Red Beckman, and we have one of our favorite guests on with us tonight, Mona Doctor, from up in Montana. Mona, are you still with us?
I'm here.
You were talking about what's going on with the wolves, and I know Red is, that's one of his favorite subjects, by the way. So are they, you're saying that there's kind of an open season on them, or what?
Well, there isn't one officially. I'm just saying people are frustrated, especially with this last relisting of them on the endangered species list. So, you know, locally we have a chapter called the Western Montana Predator Association, which was formed to educate and inform people on the wolf problem, but also, more importantly, on the disease that's being spread by the wolves, the Hydatid disease, which is a parasite which can go airborne. It is it can be found in their feces. And so with hunting season coming up, it's going to be a huge issue. It already is. And the disease itself cannot be, the symptoms don't show up for quite a few years, but they show up in the form of cysts in the body. So, and they are very, very deadly. But that's one of the things that people don't know about the wolf that was introduced into Montana. Not reintroduced, but introduced for the first time. So we certainly have an issue here. And, you know, we strongly believe, Terry and Red and the audience here that's listening, we strongly believe that the wolves were introduced into Montana as one of the strategies to depopulate our forest, or to keep people from going into the forest, and to keep us controlled and contained, and to decimate our elk herds, because hunting is is very, very important here in Western Montana, as it is in a lot of places in the West or in the country. And we believe that, you know, if they can, if people are not going to be hunting, then why do we need our guns? And they're going to use that as an excuse to, as one of the reasons to take our guns from us. So this is a bigger picture. This isn't just about the wolves. This is about the reason they're being used, or the reasons they're being used.
Well, it was never just about the wolves. It's really about the Constitution and people's rights being invaded.
Yes.
It's more Agenda 21.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
We need a major lawsuit. A friend of mine from Helena, Montana, called me just yesterday, and he does special carpentry work and such, and he was doing some work for a fellow, and he asked the fellow, he says, well, what's your thinking on this wolf question? Because it's such a big item of conversation in Montana right now. And he said, well, I guess we need biodiversity. Now, I think that there should be a lawsuit, major lawsuit, from states like Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming, and say, why are we being discriminated against for this biodiversity? If biodiversity is good for us, why wouldn't it be good for New York City, New York State? Why are we being discriminated against because we've got smaller populations and such?
Right.
And why aren't they, you know, getting these wolves started in Central Park and all these different places? Because you know, they're picking on us because we don't. We've got, of course, it's the problem is that we've got so much private property. and they don't like that. But they're discriminating against us people in the West, and if they want biodiversity, I mean, if it's good for Montana, it's got to be good for New York, too. Got to be good for the states on the east side. Biodiversity. And, of course, Mona mentioned the wolves and their disease. You see, the Fish and Wildlife did not obey the law when they did their evaluation. What do they call it, Mona? The
I forget.
Yeah, they have to have an environmental approval of some kind. What is that?
They did not
check those wolves for the disease, and as a result, we've got the problem now in Montana, and it's going to be a major problem before it's over.
Well, it already is. It's affected the bighorn sheep here. It's now affected domestic animals. Like dogs, and so that's a problem. That's a huge problem.
Yeah, I have in my hand here a copy of the Western Ag Reporter, which is a major news for agriculture in the country. I think it's probably got the biggest. I wouldn't be surprised if they have the biggest subscriber list of any publication in the country. And on the front cover, this is the one August the 12th, on the front page, it's Montana's wildlife officials decry wolf decision. For once, the Department of Fish and Game and Parks in Montana is they're speaking out against the Fish and Wildlife Service and everything. And the fellow from Helena that called me yesterday about it, he said that he saw some figures that indicate that, in fact, I think Jim Beers is the one that came up with the figures, that there was something like 70-some million dollars that have been spent of the taxpayers' money to bring those wolves into Montana. You know, that's our money. And when I spoke there at your rally in May, I talked about our money and how we and our power and how we need to take it back. And so I opened up the paper, and here's an article that says Idaho seeks to kill hundreds of protected wolves, and the fish and wildlife people in Idaho are up in the air. And they're going to do something. They're speaking out, and I have a hunch they're going to do something. Another article on the same page is headlined as "Extremely Disappointed," and it was put out by the Montana Farm Bureau. Very unhappy about the decision from the federal judge. And then another article on the same page. Assistant Secretary of the Interior for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Tom Strickland, issued the following statement regarding a decision in U.S. District Court on the Northern Rocky Mountain gray wolf population. He says, for more than 15 years, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, state wildlife agencies, tribes, conservation organizations, ranchers, and other landowners have worked hard to recover gray wolves in the northern Rocky Mountains. Our collective efforts have brought this population to the point where it is no longer requires Endangered Species Act protection. And it's quite an article, and this is one of the insiders in the Department of Interior. And so, you see, this federal judge there in Missoula, Montana, these people are scared to death of these environmentalists. When these environmentalists say jump, why, those judges jump, and they just can't seem to look at reality. So Red,
maybe you can explain that for us, because why is it and how is it that just such a small group of people can control so much?
Mostly because there's not enough of us that oppose them, and oppose them with the same energy. And of course, you see, the environmentalists seem to have a lot of money.
Yes.
And so what they are doing, they are getting money grants from a lot of major corporations and such, and I think they use a little blackmail and a little extortion and all that to get these contributions of these dollars that keep them going. And of course, I'm pretty biased on this because I'm basically a Montanan and always will be, even if I end up getting buried in Washington State. But I think that it's time that the people of Montana kind of lay down the law a little bit to the Department of Fish and Game and tell them, say, hey, over the past 100 years, you've done a pretty decent job in the fish and wildlife and parks, building our elk herds, our herds of game animals, and there are a lot more of them today than there were back in the 1930s that I remember, and because they've tried to properly manage them. Now they want to sacrifice all of that, you know, and that was all our money. And you see, you have to take a look at the Montana Constitution right in the very first part of it, and it says all of the power that government has come from the people. And we have to remind them of the fact that we gave them our power, and now they seem to be unable to counter. They've been unable to defend the rights of the people of Montana. Therefore, the people of Montana are going to have to take their power back. Either the state has to give the power back to the people and declare that the wolf and the mountain lion, the two major predators that are the problem for them right now, just say, we're not going to manage the wolves and we're not going to manage the mountain lions. And that's up to you people. You took care of the wolf back there in the early 1900s. You had to wipe them out because they were so dangerous and so they were so hard on livestock and everything else. And so, going to have to confront the fish and wildlife people there in the state of Montana, the state employees, and say, hey, we want our power back. If the environmentalists have got some power, let them use it. But we're not going to pay attention. We're not going to be whipsawed around by, judges in the courts. I gave the story of the Montana vigilantes back in 1863 and 1864 when I spoke there in Missoula and in May. The same thing goes for today. We have the precedent. It's in our favor. And I think we need to, we start acting like Montanans instead of a bunch of wimps. I think we need to challenge the State Department of Fish and Wildlife and tell them, hey, you're misusing our power. You've been using our money. You've been using our power. And now you're destroying your 100 years of good management with the elk herds and the moose and such, and it's all going down the drain. And I think we need to do something and do it, in the near future.
So, Red, why is it so difficult for people to say no?
it has not become fashionable to stand up against the crowd. You're supposed to be, worried about your standing in the community and all that kind of thing. But if you're right, you got to be man enough to stand up and tell the world, hey, I'm right, you're wrong, and we've got to do something.
Well, I'm still looking for those people that are willing to stand up and draw a line in the sand. They're very, very few and far between. They love it when I get up there or you get up there or Terry gets up there because we're, we're the target, the bullseye. And they
we're
just
committed.
Stand there. I know, but I guess I just need to, also personally, I think I need to just accept the fact that the masses are not going to stand up and draw the line in the sand.
They have not been pushed back far enough. But there's more coming, and they're going to, every time there's a push, there's more people that join us.
Well, I hope so. I'm seeing, I am seeing that a research, people in their 20s and 30s starting to pop up, which is very encouraging as well.
Yes.
Well, we can't quit. My nickname, and you can see it if you're in the chat room or if you're on any blogs, but my nickname's Tenacity. And there's times that I get down. There's times that I lose energy. There's times that I just have to recharge, even God on the seventh day rested. And sometimes we have to recognize that we need that, and we have to just back off for a little bit. But the long and the short of it is right now, it's like Red talked about, we really need a party of diligence. We've got to stay diligent. We have got to keep a watch going. And we've got to hold people accountable, and we've got to educate as many people as we can. I'm finding that a lot more people today are listening than were even 4 or 5 months ago. So we cannot lose heart. We have to stay the pace. We have to stay the course. We've got to watch what God's doing around us and the opportunities that He's giving us, and we've got to take advantage of them, and we cannot quit.
Okay.
I was just thinking here about something I said in the last hour. I mentioned how that we need to define what kind of Democrats we've got and what kind of Republicans. We need to find people in each county that are not afraid to stand up and speak out. There'll be a lot of political rallies now in the next few weeks here before November elections. And if we had some people, a dozen or so at least, in each county that would monitor the rallies and such that are coming up where they've got a candidate that's going to be there to speak and give his line of propaganda and such. And if it's a Democrat, when they ask for questions or comments or whatnot, why somebody stands up and says, well, it appears to me that just being a Democrat can mean an awful lot of different things. And so I'm just curious. We know that Obama is a Karl Marx Democrat. And so I think that your candidacy here is as a Democrat, I think you owe to the people of this district to tell us, are you a Jeffersonian Democrat? Or are you a Karl Marx Democrat? Are you going to be an Obama rubber stamp. Now, if we had people that would show up at every rally, Republican and Democrat alike, and Libertarians, just say there's a wide difference between a Jeffersonian Democrat and a Karl Marx Democrat. And we, the people, the voters of this district, we need to know that you are either a Karl Marx Democrat, you're a rubber stamp, Obama rubber stamp, or are you going to, agree with us when we want to see more politics such as Thomas Jefferson told us about and recommended to us? Doesn't that sound like something that we should be doing?
Well, absolutely. I think that needs to be on billboards. You know, what kind of Democrat are you?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of Republican are you?
Yeah.
Check the box.
Mm-hmm. But those local get-togethers like that would be ideal. The press is usually have somebody there. And I'll tell you, I think you'll throw a damper on the political machine by doing that. And they're supposed to be open forum. They're public meetings, and they're political. I think we the people have a right to know what kind of a Democrat are they, what kind of a Republican are they.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great question. I just think that when I talk to some of the people in eastern Montana, I'm going to make the suggestion that they do that in eastern Montana. You're more organized there in western Montana than they are in eastern Montana. But if everybody would, that think like we do, if they would just kind of, put their heads together and say, now we're gonna keep our eyes open here, and if there's an open meeting for a candidate coming and selling their wares, we need to be there, and he needs to have some support. He needs to have a few people there that will speak up in agreement. This is something that the media should have been doing, but they're not. So we have to do it.
I agree.
Well, there's a group of us doing it in Colorado, and there's a group of us doing it in Montana, and there's a group of us doing it in Pennsylvania. I'm telling you, it's coming. The people are really starting to get together, and I don't believe that these egos are going to continue to keep people from coming together. I believe that people are starting to see through these egos and are starting to push the reactives to the side. And I believe that, the smaller groups, so what if there's not 350 to 400? I'll be glad to have the 100 that will come together and work as a team and be proactive and be steady and vigilant.
Amen to that. I'd rather have 100 workers than, 400 or 500 that aren't working or fighting.
Well, Red, how do we bring this thing with the wolves to a head in Montana?
Well, I'm disappointed in that a month or two ago I thought that we had a fire built. And the wolf was the hot button that would do the trick. However, it has really calmed down, and I'm disappointed, of course, in what has happened. And of course, here I am. I'm not able to get out there and do any stumping across Montana. I think that. A few people, it doesn't take very many, if they get on the right, get the right program going, they can have a tremendous impact. We had one man in eastern Montana. He's passed away now, but he put up signs, hundreds of them. This is 30 years ago, 25 years ago. He put up these signs all over the highways and such, and it says, pay taxes on election day, or, pay taxes on election day. And he had this idea that if we change the tax collection so that you paid your taxes just before the election, it had an it would have an impact on how people vote. They would, they'd have that sore spot there where their billfold is supposed to sit from getting beat up and robbed, with the taxes. And it was a great idea. Well, then he came up with another idea, and he discussed it with me. And so he started an organization. And he called it the National Library of Documented Information, or something to that effect. And he had a real nice letterhead put up and everything, and he was a great letter writer. And he would send letters to all the different government agencies and ask information. And he wrote to the Census Bureau, and he wrote how many people were working and how many people were employed that should be paying income taxes. And he wrote to the IRS and asked them how many returns that they'd had. And he came up with, the Labor Department, I don't know how many different agencies he wrote to and got information. And he came up with a figure that there was about 60 million Americans who the IRS would have said were liable for the income tax, but they weren't paying. They weren't filing. And so I'll never forget it, because the local media, he would send out these letters and such and everything, and they'd come to him and they'd say, well, how many people are in your organization? Oh, and he'd say, I don't dare tell you. I don't dare say. We're trying to be discreet and such. It was one man. One man is all it was, but he had that American, ingenuity that he put to work. And he did a tremendous job, and, of course, I sure miss him there in Montana. He's been gone for about 10 years now. But we need that kind of an ingenuity. We need that kind of people thinking about what they can do. And I just think that if we could get teams of people, even if you only had four or five, but go to every political meeting where there's a politician that's there trying to sell his program or his wares to the voters, and go and just put them on the spot. What kind of a Democrat are you? What kind of a Republican are you? We need to confront these people with the fact that Democrats, Republicans, there's all kinds of each of them. And so we need to do that. I think that that's a program that could really be fun, and it could just be I don't know. that gentleman that I was just telling you about that did that, he and I went to a meeting that John Melcher did. It was a coffee a Saturday morning coffee session, and John Melcher was there. He was a senator then, and it turned out being mostly elderly women and such. And my friend and I, we sat in the back and we listened to him, and he was telling about the excess profits tax. And they wanted to put the excess profit tax on the oil companies, and That'll tell you how long ago that was. That was back in the 80s. And so we're sitting back there and calculating and one thing another. And so when they closed the meeting, and of course there was a bunch of these old party hacks that gathered around him and patting him on the back and one thing another. And my friend and I, we just kind of waited back, and when we got a chance, why, we went and shook his hand and said, I said, John, I said, you gave me an idea. I think we need, this is back, I'll tell you when it was. It was in the Jimmy Carter days when they had the interest rates up around 20%. How many of you remember that? Why can't we have an excess profits tax on interest? Well, it was like I'd hit him over the head with a 4x2. And of course, there was other people around, and so my friend and I, we left. Well, we were about 25 or 30 miles from my home, and I got home, and when I got home, my wife says, you had a phone call from John Melcher's office. So I called them and they said, John wants you to write up this idea of this excess profits tax on interest, which I did. And it was a month or two later, I was in Washington, D.C., and I went to John's office, but I wasn't able to speak to him, but I was able to speak to a staff member that takes care of his tax matters. We talked about it, and he said, we know you're absolutely correct. This is something that really should be done because it cannot be passed on to the consumer. The oil companies, when they were the excess profits tax, they just passed it on to the consumer. They just charged more. But if it was excess on interest, the banks wouldn't be able to pass that cost on to anybody else. And he told us, he said, my wife was with me, she heard it. He said, you know, it would be a good bill to pass, but he said, it won't go because of the money that the bankers put into the pockets of the political animals that run for the Senate and the House. But you plant seed like that. You plant it all over. You look for the opportunity to be creative, effective as far as being ingenious. That's something that here in this country we've kind of had a monopoly on being creative and ingenious in the way we do things and the way we design things. And so I would just challenge people to let their imaginations work for them and think of ways that they can be effective as individuals.
Well, I'm not sure how to follow that one up.
I better keep my mouth shut.
Mona, if you could make things ideal in Montana right now, if you could make things go the way that you see that they need to go, what would happen?
Well, what would happen is we would get back, we'd not consider parties to be the all in all, whether it be Republican, Democrat, Constitutional, Libertarian, I don't care. If we could get off of that and onto our Constitution, that would be a level playing field. If we could just agree, if we could all agree on the Constitution, then we could, I think we would be unstoppable because we would have more, every citizen in this, even in our, just in our county, because, you know, a lot of other counties in the state of Montana have taken our model here, and they've duplicated it there. And that's good, but we need to go a step further, and we need to get people educated and informed on the Constitution. So, you know, because most people don't even know their history. I didn't know history. I didn't know my history until 2 years ago when I started to learn it. So that's what I think. If we could change the paradigm, change the thinking of the parties, a party is going to change everything, and get back to the Constitution, I just think we could do great things. But there's so much divisiveness because of the party system. We have had to work hard at just changing that paradigm before we even got to square one. So that's what I see, honestly. Because any time that people have been enlightened or awakened to the fact that the Constitution is the document we should be following, every time that's happened, it has created such a huge step forward in our county. And it's spread across the state of Montana, western Montana, as far as I know. So that's what I see. And that's one of the biggest reasons that we had the Liberty Convention. We wanted to get people networked together so they could see into the whites of each other's eyes, sit at a table, belly button to belly button, kneecap to kneecap, and say, you know what, I think we all want the same thing. We want our liberty. We just want to be left alone, bottom line. And once we get people to understand that and the fact that, you know, our Constitution is still, they still haven't completely killed our Constitution. They're trying, and they're ignoring it. But we must keep that alive. We must. And the more that we speak of it, and the more that more people that are they're carrying their citizens' rule books around and pulling it out of their back pocket and sharing it with people, that's what I see. It's going to strengthen and fortify and move our counties forward to truth and liberty, preserving our liberty anyway, what's left of it.
Mona, you know, we've been taught all our lives that we, the laymen out here, the working people, the people at the grassroots, the Constitution is too complicated for us to understand, so we have to have an attorney that will explain it to us and a judge to... rule on it, and I think that we really need to talk about the intent of the Constitution a lot more than we do. What was the intent of the Constitution? I'm not particularly, interested in all the articles and the sections and the paragraphs and all of that. I'm more interested in people understanding the intent of the founders when they produced that document. And the intent was they wanted a government that would serve the people, that would be responsive to the people. And they wanted a government that was controlled by very strict law. They said, we want a government of law, not men. And, that's a little easier to communicate to people than talking about the Constitution. Yes, the Constitution is vital, and people need to understand it. But we have to get people to understand the intent that the founders had when they sat down and created that document. The intent. What was the intent of that Constitution? It was the founders knew all about tyrannies. They knew all about the history of mankind on this planet. and how that over the many centuries, it was very rare that the people were free. It was always the tyrant that was free. And of course, that's what King George III wanted to be. He wanted to be free to do as he pleased as far as the colonies were over here. He wanted to be free to tax them. He wanted to be free to just kidnap people for their navy and their you know, and all of that. And so that was what the War of Independence was all about. We want to be free. We don't want King George III to be free. And so here we are. We have a situation right now where Obama is free to do anything he wants to do pretty well. And we the people, we are so limited in our freedoms. And so I think we really need to start with talking about the intent. What was the intent of that Constitution?
Well, the founders knew that the kind of government we have right now would happen if there weren't limitations. Yeah.
They warned us.
They said
eternal vigilance is the price of liberty.
Yes.
And it absolutely is.
And we lost our liberty because we didn't pay the price.
Yep. Yep. Well, I'm hoping that the little bit that we're doing is actually holding them back from causing them to be 100% tyrannical and successful at it with the people. I'm hoping that we are doing our part to hold that back and push it back.
Well, we're definitely not doing enough yet, but I believe it's coming to that. And I believe the one thing most, more than anything else, that is holding them back is the same thing that held the Japanese army from coming into this continent and attacking us on our own homeland when they had the opportunity. What that general said was that we knew that your people were the best armed population in the world, and we knew that there was no way we could control your people.
Yeah. And that's the reason why they're trying to disarm us.
Absolutely.
Globalist, yes.
Absolutely.
Well, I understand that sales of firearms and ammunition have gone through the roof in the past 2 years.
I wanted to call Dylan and find out what their percentage of sales is now on their ammunition reloaders. Because I'm betting in the last year that their sales probably tripled.
I'm sure.
And I'm surprised they haven't gone up on their prices. You can still buy a square deal loader for about $365, which is, you know, in my mind, a really good buy. Probably one of the best investments somebody can make today.
Sure. Absolutely. Yep.
Well, we have about 10 minutes left. What would you like to talk about? Somebody mentioned in our chat room, one of our buddies mentioned about what the jury accomplished for us with the Blagojevich verdict.
You know, I have not followed that very close. However, how can they get a jury in a case like that where the people listen to all that testimony over weeks? And how could they have a jury that wouldn't come up to a conclusion that the whole thing is so corrupt that just picking on one, that isn't going to make any corrections? I'd hate to be on that jury. I'd like to be on the jury, but it wouldn't be too hard for me to make a decision, but. How could you listen to all of that without coming to the conclusion that the prosecutors are as corrupt or more corrupt than the defendant in the case, and the judge probably no different. And so that puts the jury in kind of a pickle. But I think that they probably made the right decision so far. I haven't followed it like I should have, but you know, I've thought about how in the world could a guy judge, you know, between a bunch of crooks? It's crooks going after crooks. It's political animals going after political animals, and it's just a demonstration of how bad the justice system and the whole political system has become.
Well, does anybody know where, like, Resco is, for example? Has he been sentenced?
That's the real estate developer, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I think he was sentenced.
Anybody check on
buddy?
Anybody watch what's going on with the Joyce Foundation?
No.
Well, it turns out this Joyce Foundation is tied back into the carbon exchange, and all of Obama's cronies and buddies are either on the board or investors. And there's this one little bank up there that the Joyce Foundation has gotten involved in, and they managed to get a few billion dollars worth of bailout to save this little bank that they're all invested in up there. And it's all tied in with the carbon exchange. If they get that cap and trade through, the royalties that Obama and his cronies will get off of that Joyce Foundation will be in the billions per year.
I don't know what we would do without the internet. I've not been able to monitor it like I would like to over the last several weeks because I just don't have the energy, and I seen somebody put something on there. They asked Obama if he knew the governor of Illinois there that wanted to sell that Senate seat of his. And Obama said, well, he'd only met him one time, and that was at a ball game or something like that. And whoever did this, they had access to a lot of film and such, and so they just showed these film clips of Obama and the governor of Illinois at different functions over a period of a couple of 3 years, apparently. Now, how many of you have you either one of you seen that?
Oh, sure.
We wouldn't get that from the mainstream media, would we? But the
actually, Sean Hannity did a bunch of that stuff back in October of 2008, and there's been actually a bunch of internet hoaxes going on about that ever since. It's still floating around out there. I still get them once in a while, but. It turns out that Obama and, you know, people like Valerie Jarrett and these people were all intertwined, and it wasn't just with Bill Ayers, it was also his brother. And, you know, Van Jones is sitting on the board of directors for that Joyce Foundation.
Wow.
I mean, it's just, there is so many connections now. I mean, he's been made out to be such a liar. Proven to be such a liar in so many ways that it's just comical almost. I mean, even that thing when he was on the television yesterday talking to these few people and outside and sitting there spewing his garbage, it is so obvious that everything that comes out of the man's mouth is propaganda and a lie and a deception. It's beyond belief that anyone at this point that has their eyes and ears even partially open could believe anything that comes out of the man's mouth.
Now, I haven't listened lately or seen lately. What is Obama's approval rating?
I think it's at 42%. His overall approval rating is 42%. And I don't believe that. I think that's skewed.
Sure.
Because I think if you look at the approval rating of independents, it's down in the low 20s.
Wow.
Well, you see, we've got a lot of people out there that voted for him, and they're not about to admit that they made a mistake.
That's true.
Well, I'd be afraid to be driving around with an Obama sticker on my car.
Did you see that on the internet, Terry, about that little deal in the healthcare thing, providing for a sales tax on real estate sales?
Yes, I did. I mean, it just gets more bizarre. I mean, the more you find out, the more you dig into it. It just gets that much more bizarre. I mean, I'm seeing headlines like tax breaks going away from home purchases.
Yeah.
And what they're talking about is, of course, that these tax breaks that they were giving people, these extra tax credits, actually, you know, when they went away, the real estate sales went away. I mean, after the end of June, they fell off at the end of April, but then they fell off again at the end of June because they had to be closed. And it's just been, it's a nightmare out there. I mean, 500,000 jobs lost in the last month. And he's out there telling people that we're at the recovery stage.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that amazing? And you know, now we're going to be headed into the second wave of foreclosures because of the subprime debacle and the arms that are going to be readjusting. I'm telling you, it's not pretty.
No, it's not pretty at all.
They're busy recruiting people to our cause.
Yes.
Well, we've got about 2 minutes. Anything you'd like to close with, Mona?
I think you've convinced me to stay in the fight. You know, because I feel not just an obligation but a duty to continue. And I guess it just has to, however it appears to me, from my vantage, my perspective, you know, I have to consider, I don't even know how God is strategizing all of this, and I have to trust him. I really do in this whole process. I have to trust him and what he's doing. So that's what I'm going to hang my hat on.
Yeah, if you want to do a little bit of research, check into Shore Bank. I think that's what it's called, the name of the little bank that they bailed out up in Chicago that's associated with that. Now the Joyce Foundation, I think, is part owners of that. And they're the ones that are going to be involved in issuing all these carbon credits and things now, I guess.
Wow.
So check into that. And check, I mean, you start looking into this, and all of a sudden the pieces of the puzzle on it's all about money. The whole sham is all about money.
Yes.
And basically it comes out of our pockets and goes into theirs. It's really just a continuation of the Federal Reserve.
Yes, it is.
Only they found a different way to get it than you know, than just through charging us interest on a fraudulent debt. One thing I want to mention, we've got 1 minute left or less than that. Is that if you take away the fact that our unalienable rights is given to us by our Creator, then you are nothing more than one pack, one dog in a pack. And everybody's going to be looking at everybody else like they're the obstacle to their next meal. Think about that. We'll be back in a week with the balls in our minds. Mona, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Good night, Red.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night, Red.
Good night.